Henk, was hältst du davon, wenn wir mal ein bisschen Werbung machen für unseren fantastischen Podcast Was mit Rock und Vinyl?
Ja, aber was willst du denn da sagen?
Na, dass wir ein überragend guter Musikpodcast sind. Wir reden wöchentlich über die wunderbare Welt der Rockmusik, querbeet durch die Jahrzehnte und Musikgenres. Also was meinst du, machen wir einen Spot?
Ja, aber wozu? Wir sind doch so gut. Wir brauchen doch keine Werbung. Was mit Rock und Vinyl?
Überall da, wo gute Podcasts zu Hause sind.
The greatest drummers in the world in the palm of your hand. From the heart of Berlin, the Drum Trainer Online Podcast.
Willkommen zu einer weiteren Folge vom Drum Trainer Online Podcast. Und diesmal präsentieren wir euch ein Interview mit dem großartigen, unglaublichen Tommy Aldridge. Ja, Drummer für Black Oak Arkansas, Pat Travers, Ozzy Osbourne, Gary Moore, Whitesnake, Thin Lizzy. Ein totaler Double Bass Pionier, ein tierischer Schlagzeuger. Und wir hatten die große Freude, eine Klinik mit ihm zu hosten im Drumtrainer Berlin, zusammen mit Yamaha. Und da haben wir ganz viele Performances von ihm aufgenommen, die ihr auch auf Drumtrainer Online gucken könnt. Und dann habe ich zusammen mit dem großartigen Randy Black ein Interview nach der Klinik mit ihm gemacht. Ich muss zugeben, ich war dann auch schon so ein bisschen durch. Wir mussten die ganze Scheiße aufbauen, abbauen. Wir mussten Video filmen. Das ist auf jeden Fall ein sehr stressiges Unterfangen. Dann waren sich Leute mit Fragen da und wir haben das Interview nach der Show gemacht. Meine Zunge war schon so ein bisschen lahm. Kann auch dran liegen, dass ich schon ein Bier getrunken hatte. Auf jeden Fall habe ich so ein bisschen Ladehemmung gehabt, aber er hat dann doch richtig ausgepackt und ein paar sehr interessante Sachen von sich gegeben. Und Gott sei Dank hatte ich den großartigen Randy dabei, der auch noch viele Fragen gestellt hat. Also, viel Spaß beim Interview mit dem großartigen Tommy Aldridge. Guys, I'm so happy, drumtrainer.online, and we have this legend of rock here, Tommy Aldridge at Drumtrainer Online. We had an awesome clinic, and I just want to ask some questions to Tommy. Tommy, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
You were born in Nashville, I wrote, but you grew up also in Texas and Florida.
Florida, yeah.
So. I heard like your band Black Oak Arkansas that was signed by Stax Records. Is that right?
I think early on, but they went on to Atlantic or Atco, yeah.
Right, but I just know Stax Records, of course, from Otis Redding and Booker T. So there's a very R&B-ish approach.
Right.
And we were talking about that you said like Mitch Mitchell was a big influence to you. Mm-hmm. So I could hear. You are a heavy hitter, but you also have a little funky approach, don't you? I mean, it's grooving, it's swinging sometimes.
I try to, yeah. I try to, but I don't swing it like Mitch Mitchell would. He was a big band guy.
Right.
I try, yeah.
So that was one of your influences. And then, of course, your first pro gig, like real pro gig, was Black Oak, Arkansas, right?
Right, yeah.
And you moved to Los Angeles with the guys, or did
well,
you?
Well, that was where, I mean, our offices were out there, but we were on the road. We played, we averaged about 260 shows a year.
Several.
So, yeah, for 6.5, almost 7 years with that band. So we lived on the road. We didn't live, we had homes, but we were never in them. Literally, it was 260 days a year on average for almost 7 years that I was in that band.
Amazing. And did you still have time to practice during those years?
No, we were on the road, like I said, and when you spend that amount of time on the road, if you figure it out, there's 365 days in a year, and we were on the road on average for 265. So that'll give you an idea. There was no time for really rehearsing. We were on the road constantly, continually. We would play in markets that no one else would go to. That was where the success of the band was built. Not in major markets, but in small secondary and even third tier markets that other bands wouldn't go to.
Right. And it's just
It's interesting for me. I read somewhere that you left the band also because most of the guys in the band were heavy pot smokers. So is that right?
That's not why I left. I mean, people can do smoke whatever they want. No, that's not why I left. Why I left was I wanted to go and do something musically that I was excited about. And it was my own mistake when I joined that band, even though I was an equal owner and a member. There was an employment agreement that I signed that made things very complicated and very complex. So even though I was an equal owner, I was signed to this employment agreement through the corporation. There were corporations and all these land partnerships and all these entities because we became ultimately very successful and there was a lot of money involved. Well, I wanted to leave and go and do something else, my own band, and they said, well, no, we would be unhappy if you did that.
Right.
It's not a good time for that. And I said, but I don't, this was 6 months after I joined, and I was there for 6 years. So that'll give you an idea how, when someone threatens to do something to your arms and legs if you leave, then you're a little scared.
Is that
about,
right?
Absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
So, and I read you really had to hide then from them after you left the
Yeah,
band.
And I snuck out in the dark of night and went to Chicago, and I was kind of living with some friends there. My mom didn't even know how to reach me. I was afraid to let anyone know how to contact me because I knew what had happened to some other people when I was in the band, that business people that didn't comply with certain things. And, yeah, they got, you know, it was scary. I didn't know that had anything to do with the music business. I thought if you were in the mafia or something like that, you would have to deal with stuff like that. But I never thought that I would be threatened if I wanted to leave a band, you know.
Right.
But it was my own doing because I signed things that I shouldn't have signed, and I was using them as a stepping stone to get someplace else, and that wasn't cool of me to do that. So I learned a real hard lesson.
Right. And, of course, I don't want to go over all
sure.
the names then, but then you went to Pat Travers Band, is that right, after that?
Yeah, that was I was tied up for a year in lawsuits for about a year. And the first band, apart from the band that I was trying to form, we weren't able to continue because there were injunctions and stuff. I wasn't able to sign any kind of recording agreements or anything like that because I was tied up with this previous employment agreement through the corporation with Black Oak. And so all through that year, I was working on this band, but it didn't happen because for those reasons. And the first offer that I got when I was free and clear legally and could actually work was from Pat Travers.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And from that, I think the next step was Ozzy Osbourne. After Pat Travers, is that right?
Well, no. I moved to England after I finished with Pat. We finished touring in Europe. And my girlfriend, I was having girlfriend issues and work issues, band issues. So I said, screw it, I'm going to go and I'm going to live in England. I wanted to live over there anyway for recording some of those studios that I'd always liked the records that came out of. And I was able to do that. I moved to England at the end of the Travers tour. We were finished in Europe and I went to England. I didn't even go back home. And I sold my house, and I moved to England. I lived there for a few years. I met Gary Moore. That's when I met Gary Moore. I started working with Gary.
All right.
I met Randy, and I'd known Ozzy from when I was with Black Oak. The first tour that we did in Europe with Black Oak, we were supporting Black Sabbath, and Ozzy was a singer with Black Sabbath at that time. So I had known Ozzy for years and years before that.
And Randy Rhoads was always the guitarist for him.
No. Randy was a young boy, was a young guy giving guitar lessons at his mom's guitar school in L.A. at that time. No, this is when I was with Black Oak. Ozzy was with Black Sabbath, and we were supporting them in Europe.
All right.
So Randy was nowhere in the picture at that time. This was 20 years before Randy, and yeah.
Oh, really?
And this is when I met Ozzy, and so he heard me play, I guess, with Black Oak back then. Not that he would have known a good drummer from a bad one, because he doesn't know a good guitar player from a bad one, so other people make those decisions, you know.
That's interesting, but then I wrote that when you met Randy Rhoads, that you always said in some interviews, and I read that he was a big inspiration for you.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I met Randy when he came to meet Gary Moore at our rehearsal. I was working with Gary, living in England, and he had just come over to start working with Ozzy, and he was a big Gary Moore fan, and he and Bob Daisley came to our rehearsal one day outside of London, we were rehearsing in London. He came to our rehearsal room, and that's when I met Randy when he came to meet Gary Moore, because Gary Moore was signed to Jet Records, which is the same label that they just signed Ozzy.
Right.
Yeah, and this is before the Blizzard record was recorded or the Diary of a Madman. They hadn't started anything yet.
Okay.
They came to the show that night. We were playing at a place in London. I can't remember. Doing a live album with Gary. And Randy and Bob Daisley came to that show.
All right. So after the Gary Moore thing, then came Ozzy Osbourne gig.
Right, yeah. Right. And it was during that time because I was working with Gary who was a Jet Records artist. And that's when Don Arden came to me and asked me if I'd do the drums on the Ozzy records, and I passed. Because I was working with Gary, I didn't have time to do it. Yeah.
Awesome. So, of course, there were a lot of bands afterwards. You still play with Whitesnake. I think you left the band three times, and now you're back?
Well, I didn't really leave. There were little hiatuses, you know. David gets upset about something and, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I just finished the new Whitesnake record, all the drums for the new Whitesnake record, which will be out in the spring of next year. So David's doing the vocals now, so...
Amazing. So Randy did ask you something before. Maybe I pass the microphone to him about some fitness.
Yeah. Cool.
Because it's so amazing that you look that fit.
Yeah.
I mean, and you still play on that level.
Hmm. Yeah, I was just, well, first I just want to say it's an absolute honor to do this interview with you.
Well, thanks, Randy.
I said one of my questions during the clinic was, I saw Tommy first play on Don Kushner's rock concert with Black Oak Arkansas back in the 70s, I think. And I was blown away by the energy and the solo he did and just overall his playing. And it's so many years later that I see him here tonight play. And it's pretty much the exact same energy. And I'm thinking, how does he maintain that kind of energy level? And it was just like, is it genetics or... Yeah, how do you maintain that kind of level to your playing? It's really amazing.
I don't know. I mean, I enjoy it. I get excited when I play. I still enjoy drumming. And people ask me, well, when you're going to retire? And I figured, well, I'll retire when I don't enjoy it anymore, you know. And because I enjoy it, and it's still such a joy, it's a blast, and it's so much fun.
It's very obvious.
It's easy when it's that much fun, you know. And as years go by, you have to do certain things. You have to stop doing some things that you used to could do. I can't stay up all night chasing girls, you know. the wife would frown on that at this point as well. But there's some things that you have to do. You can't stay up partying all night, you know. You have to... If you want to dance, you have to pay the band. So you learn that as the years go by, you have to make more and more and more and more sacrifices. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get any easier. It only gets more challenging. And there's when it comes to physical instruments, like the drums are, and I have kind of a physical style, and I play very loud music, there's some dynamic in it. But for the most part, it's just kind of pedal to the metal. And it's one thing sitting back there, you know, doing some brush work and stuff. It takes a lot of technique, but it's another ball game when you're playing this far from the kit. And people have these expectations. Because when it's a two-edged sword. When you do all these crazy things when you're 20, if you don't have some place to go when you're 60 or 70 and you can't do all those old crazy things, then it's a pretty sad state. So I try to do whatever I need to do, whatever sacrifices I need to make, you know, in my lifestyle and stuff to be able to maintain a level that I feel is, you know, somewhat representative of what people want to see and hear when they come to a show, you know.
Uh-huh. But you mentioned biking, I think.
Yeah, I've always been a cyclist. It's like drumming. I just never outgrew them, grew the bicycle, you know. And my mom probably still thinks one of these days I'm going to outgrow the drums and the bicycle, but I haven't. And I tour with a bike, and it's my second love, you know, passion. Mm-hmm. I get on my bike. It's my therapy, you know. And I love bicycles. They're just the mechanical aspect of them, building my own bikes and stuff. And And riding, and it's real therapy, you know.
Yeah. One follow-up to that, you spoke very fondly of your mother during the clinic. Mm-hmm. Was she also, I mean, is part of it genetics?
My mom, I lost my mom last year. She was There was not an exercise thing or any kind of regimen. Like, my father passed away at 62. He was an alcoholic and a smoker and had high cholesterol, and he was a very sweet man, but he just didn't take care of himself. And there was never in my family an issue around fitness, or I bicycled when I was a kid to school and stuff like that, only because, like, drumming, it was just fun. Mm-hmm. And now I bicycle a lot, you know, probably 250, 300 miles a week. But it's not because I'm a dedicated, diehard fitness addict. I just love cycling. Okay. And so the byproduct of it is it benefits. I get benefit. I stay lean, and it keeps me fit, and it keeps my heart rate. My heart rate, resting heart rate is in the low 40s and stuff. And it just, you know, there's benefits to it. But I can't take any credit about being judicious about exercise or anything like that. It just happens to be something that I love to do, cycling, you know. And if I can't bike, I'll run, but I prefer cycling.
Very cool.
Well, I just have two more questions. Uh-huh. Of course, we're talking about, and we are at drum school, and I think it's very important what you said before during the clinic for young players about drug abuse. Like you said something like being a drug addict is a 24-hour, 24/7 thing.
And yeah.
So is drumming. So what would be your recommendation for young kids?
Well, I think you find out maybe not. With Andy Warhol, there was a famous quote from Andy Warhol: "Everyone's famous for 15 minutes." And I never understood what that meant until I got a little bit of fame, because what that means is, I think, I've never discussed it with him, and he's gone now, but to me it seems like that 15 years can seem like 15 minutes. 150 years to some people could seem like 15 minutes. And so if what you think you can do when you're 18 and get away with when you're 28, it's not going to happen. And also what happens in the fullness of time is you really learn and you find out why you do what you do. And this is just something that comes with living life. And the ones of us that are blessed with enough time to learn how to live life and take care of ourselves and to stay away from the things that are going to shorten that or take away our abilities to maximize whatever gifts God's given us, then you need to stay away from. But it takes a little maturity to do that. And things that you could do when you were 15, boom, not a problem again. But your reasons why you do things become very evident. I know a lot of really talented musicians, and I've seen a lot of them come and go. And what happens, they get more involved with the pomp and circumstance of the rock life or the success life, whether it be a musician or an athlete or, you know, a professional person, a lawyer or whatever. They get hung up when the money starts coming in. Then you start seeing why people do what they do. And I think motive speaks to everything. If you want to play drums because you love drumming, you just love the craft, you love the instrument and everything associated with it, all the other stuff doesn't matter. You don't even think about that. I never started playing drums to make a lot of money. Right. In fact, the first several years I was drumming, I couldn't afford to feed myself. I'd buy sticks instead of food, literally. Right. I would spend my money on sticks or cymbals or heads so that my drums sounded better or good, you know, because that was more important to me. And I've been in situations where I've been making an unholy amount of money doing the same exact thing, but the reason that I did it has never changed. There comes a point when you get older that you have to be responsible. If you have a family, you have to say, well, I have responsibility to this child and so forth. So you can't do things that aren't money-wise. You can't be stupid about money. I never play drums for money, but if I don't take care of that aspect of my drumming, then I'll have to do something else on the side in order to do that on the side.
Right.
You understand? It has to be full-time, because the real serious guys, they do it 24/7. If you're going to be a drug addict, you have to be dedicated, man. If you're going to be a drug addict, you got to be dedicated. I know some really dedicated drug addicts that were really dedicated musicians, and one of them suffered. Either they got away from the drugs or they got away from the instrument. And I always choose this. Anything that stands between me and my ability to do the very best job and to fulfill my responsibilities that are in the audience that come to see anything that I'm a part of, anything that comes between my ability to do that, I take it out of my life. And that includes drugs, women, material things, money, whatever it is. Because once you'll get to a hard point in your career where it's harder for you to do the things at 35 that you could do easily at 25, especially if it's physical. You have to give up those things that are keeping you from doing that. Right. If that means more time on a treadmill, more time on a bicycle or whatever, right. more time in your practice room, and that speaks to why people do what they do. If you're doing this to get chicks, if you're doing this to get laid every night or to go out and have parties every night, that's part of it. There's nothing wrong with having a good time, but as long as you don't devastate your career. Right. And motivation is everything and what it's predicated on. So I've always admired musicians. You can tell by being around someone for very long what their motives are, why they do what they do, what their foundation is. And a really strong foundation serves anyone well. You know?
So that leads to my last question. Okay. Oh, Randy had another question.
I would like to ask, with all you've achieved, and I mean, you've done some amazing work through your career, do you still have any goals?
Do I have goals? I'm not like Brad Pitt or anything. I'm just like a little, you know, very simple-minded rock drummer, you know, that's been very blessed. So I haven't, you know, no cures for children's cancer or anything here. It's all really simple stuff and very, in the big scheme of things, very inconsequential what I do. I try to take care of the... be in a grateful attitude and thankful for the blessings that come my way. But yes, I have goals. Every goal, like tomorrow I have to do a clinic, and my goal tomorrow is to do as good a drum clinic as I can do. The new White Snake record that I just did, my goal was to do something really cool and vibrant, and that's challenging, you mm-hmm. know? Even though it may be the same thing that I've done on past records, it's still tomorrow, and so I'm always looking for tomorrow. I have some goals. The record that I would really like to be the most proud of, I haven't recorded yet, so that's a goal.
That's cool.
That's a goal. The tour that if there are 180 dates on the tour and 160 of them I'm pleased with, it would really be nice if I could be pleased with 170 of those days.
Great attitude. Wow. Right.
Consistency on stage.
I promise, last question, okay. But for me really important, drumming and spirituality. You seem to be a very spiritual person, a believer, so mm-hmm. tell us something about that, about your approach.
Well, everything I do, I have priorities in my life, and my first priority is God. And whenever I filter everything through that relationship, I don't have to worry about anything else. As long as I can consult the person that created me, he can give me some really good insight about, well, maybe you should do this, or maybe you should do that. Because I find myself sometimes in situations where I don't really know what to do, and what I do in those situations is nothing. I don't do anything until I find out from the guy that really knows what I should be doing with my life, because I don't always know, because I get preoccupied with this, or I get maybe my ideas of what really should be happening get confused in the hustle and bustle of the rock life or the world in general. And so every decision I make, I consult the guy that gives me the great ideas musically.
Through prayer or just?
Through prayer.
Right.
Just by saying his name.
Right. All right. Cool. Guys, Tommy Aldridge, it's such a great honor to have you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Dirk, thank you for having me.
Looking forward to having you maybe again. So have fun on this tour. Drum Trainer Online, macht's gut.
Cool. Thank you, guys.
So Leute, wenn euch das gefallen hat, dann gebt uns doch bitte mal ein Like und noch viel wichtiger, abonniert den Podcast, damit ihr ja nichts verpasst. Und wenn ihr diese ganzen geilen Trommelschweine mal in Action sehen wollt, besucht auf jeden Fall unsere Webseite drumtrainer.online. Da findet ihr über 600 Videotutorials mit über 60 Dozenten. Und da sind wir ziemlich stolz drauf und das kann sich sehen lassen. Also schaut mal vorbei, wir sehen uns oder hören uns. Liebe Grüße aus Berlin.
Wie viele Kaffees waren es heute schon? Kaffee spielt im Leben vieler eine sehr große Rolle. Und das nicht nur zu Hause oder im Café, sondern auch am Arbeitsplatz. Dafür gibt es Lavazza Professional.
Kaffee am Arbeitsplatz, der genauso lecker schmeckt wie in eurem Lieblingscafé. Die perfekte Kaffeelösung für jede Art von Unternehmen. Klein, mittel, groß. Ihr habt auf jeden Fall einen Kaffee, der schmeckt. Die richtige Motivation für eure Arbeitstage. Alle Infos zu Lavazza Professional findet ihr auf lavazzapro.de mit allen Kaffeelösungen für euer Büro.
Ich habe mich natürlich schockverliebt, weil die war wirklich ganz, ganz klein.
So begann die Mensch-Hund-Beziehung zwischen Christina und Tierschutzhund Frieda. Und wie es danach, nach dem ersten Moment der Verliebtheit, so weiterging und welche Klippen es danach zu umschiffen galt, das hört ihr in der neuen Ausgabe von Iswas Dog, dem Podcast für harmonische Mensch-Hund-Beziehungen.
Iswas Dog mit Malte Asmus.
Überall, wo es Podcasts gibt.